Hello, and welcome to the Inside Reviews podcast for March the 25th, 2022. This is episode 103. On today's show, we'll be talking about driving the Nissan Ariya, spending a week with the Rivian R1T, and Mercedes Technology and Innovation Day when we got to ride in the EQE and see a copy of the EQXX in person. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the meticulous Mr. Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have Kyle Connor joining us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Outspec Studios, where they produce high voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. Unfortunately, Martin can't make it join us today. He's been off on holiday with his family, and that's more important than hanging out with us this week, at least. So this means I'll be the one pushing the buttons today as we go. So fasten your seatbelt. It could be a bumpy ride. So before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right. So with that out of the way, welcome everybody.
Hey, Dom.
Welcome everybody.
Good morning.
All right. So so let's dive right into what we've been driving this week. We're probably not going to spend too much time in the news this week because we've all been traveling and driving like awesome electric vehicles and haven't had time to really soak up a lot of news. But we'll touch on the highlights, of course. But let's start off with you, Kyle. So you somehow convinced Rivian to let you have an R1T electric pickup truck for a whole week, maybe even like 8 days, I think you said. You even missed last week's podcast because you wanted to spend every possible moment making videos while you had the opportunity. So on your Outspec Reviews channel, you have 7 videos, including a full in-depth driving review, which just went up yesterday. That's pretty impressive, but that's not all you have. On the Outspec Motoring channel, which is where you have like your road trip oriented videos, there's another 3. One is your complete 70-mile-an-hour highway range test live stream, which is a pretty epic 5.5 hours in length. And the other two parts are parts 1 and 2 of another road trip. And that one, the first part is like a mere 1.5 hours long. But the second part is like just shy of 12 hours. Dude.
Well, so those are just live streams. So the full edited videos on motoring will go. So the idea is we've had Outspec Motoring. We really want to do one EV road trip every week, like a full produced thing every week from someone at the team. And we pretty much can do that, I would say, but it's a struggle to do it. So we've decided to supplement that channel with some of the live streams of the testing that we do for Outspec Reviews. Outspec Reviews YouTube channels where all the finished videos go up with all of the results from our charging test, the range test, the thermal test, the ADAS testing, the performance driving reviews. And so, yeah, I'm starting to live stream stuff, and it's not always going to be me. You'll see other people on there. But I blocked off this week to just work with the Rivian and do everything we needed to do. And honestly, it was not enough time. A full week to review an electric vehicle, working nonstop, sleeping, you know, very little, is not enough time to fully evaluate a vehicle. So we, we'll keep doing stuff with it, and we'll get it back and keep going. Basically, we have now friends and family in the area that are getting their trucks that we'll be able to work with, but we got all the big stuff out of the way. And then the rest We'll do, like, how's it off-road and things like this. Although I did take it out to Moab. That'll be a video.
So there's an important question here in the chat. So they're asking Jordan, who isn't actually with you today, Jordan Schaefer, can you please post what drink Kyle drinks? I keep forgetting and want to try it. So that's like super important. You're known for your Starbucks.
Surprising. I think at least 40 to 50 times per day I get this question about what drink I drink. Not exaggerating. And Jordan's actually at Starbucks on his way into the office right now, so he's picking up some Starbucks.
Gary Clark might even know it here.
Gary's got it. That's Trenta. Perfect.
I don't know how you say that.
Acai. It's a Trenta strawberry acai with light ice, no water, no strawberry inclusions, but still shaken. Imagine me rolling up with my golden retriever in my smart car, an electric smart car convertible, ordering that drink. It's a look.
All right. That's a great acai. I learned how to say saguaro this week.
What is this?
Saguaro, I think. Or maybe saguaro? I'm even saying it wrong now. It's those big cactus in the desert that grow up.
Oh, I've never heard of this.
I think but it's spelled like S-A-G-U-U-R-E-R-O, I believe.
You saw the donkeys on the trail?
I did see the donkeys on the trail.
We saw them too.
So Kyle and I are talking about, we both went to Arizona this week to drive the Hummer EV, but we can't talk about that yet. We can talk about the donkeys. Yeah, I've got a little bit of video. I took the video as like I saw them coming up, and I have to figure out how to share some of this stuff because I've got some great footage of the Hummer doing like ridiculous things, but we can't talk about that. So
it's just completely ridiculous. I can talk about it. I've driven it. Sure. I didn't go on this drive. I did the first drive a couple months ago. And the one thing that I noticed that Kyle said, I don't know if you said it to me when we were just messaging each other or if you posted it online, I can't remember, but you said you were smiling and laughing the whole time because it's just ridiculous. And if you remember when I drove it back a few months ago, all my tweets and like short video clips, I'm like laughing uncontrollably in the tweets because that was my same reaction, that it was just so ridiculous that it was funny. Like I just was like giggling the whole time when I was recording because it just such a big, bulky, like squishy, giant thing shouldn't be that fast. It was ridiculous. And I laughed because you kind of said the same thing. You said, I was just laughing the whole time we did the drive. So, I mean, well, I think you could say that without giving driving impressions, but
yeah. Right. I mean, I think we can talk about the idea of the Hummer EV being American excess in an electric vehicle. It's exactly as you would expect the Hummer to be. And the same people that have been driving Hummers will continue to drive these but electric. Yeah. And they're going to block every single charging station because I tried to fit this thing. I don't think this is an impression. It is actually an impression. Basically, we'll talk about it next week or the week after.
I mean, we've got lots to talk about this week because the Rivian is like pretty epic in its own, its own way. It's like it's distinct. It's, you know, it's funny. They're both like electric pickup trucks and with like crazy amounts of power and everything, but they've got really distinct personalities. I haven't driven a Rivian yet. I believe both of you guys have. Let's start off. So your first video that you did with Rivian was you took just like you got it and you took questions that you had collected a bunch of questions. So you answered those. So I don't know if you can think back of what were the main kind of things that people wanted to know and what were the answers?
Yeah, I guess maybe we should talk about what we did with the Rivian, how it went, because it's not like your traditional. The reason the Rivian is so exciting is Tom and I and the other guys here at Inside EVs, we get to drive everything. We're so lucky where manufacturers will send cars to a fleet, let local journalists drive them, and it's just part of what we do. It's how we make a living making videos on the cars that are loaned to us. It's also, a great way for journalists to understand cars. These new startup companies, Tesla, Lucid, Rivian, to come to mind, don't typically keep cars in these fleets. In fact, they never have. And so it's very different in the review strategy to get the car, basically. We can't just call up, and say, hey, can we, you have a car in Denver, can you just send it up to our house? We had to work with Rivian to say, okay, what's the logistics of this going to look like? We'll go down to Denver and pick it up and see them. And we were greeted by an engineer and a friend at the PR staff that we know really well. And they took us around the whole car, showed us, we knew most of everything, but we talked about nerdy things. We talked about, what the truck can handle, can't handle. And basically what they said to us was, here are the keys, literally do whatever you want with it. Full confidence in the truck, which is like, maybe we have this perception that like when you give us a car, we're going to push it to its limits, which is part of our job. But like, we're not here to destroy things. We don't put abuse loads on vehicles. We just want to see what they'll actually do. And Rivian was like, yep, it can take whatever you can throw at it. And guess what? In 3,200 miles of driving, a lot of off-roading, rock climbing, drag racing, towing, ripping up back roads, sliding around. It took it without a squeak, rattle, or any noise from the cab, which is so impressive from a brand new automaker to me. And the motors are still just as good as they were on day one. And so, yeah, you would expect a car to have, you know, last 3,000 miles fine. But honestly, there's so many cars we test. And in 500 miles, I can feel that they're worse than when I first got them. So I was really impressed with it.
Kyle, really quick, you talked about noise. One of the things I noticed in most of my driving, I drove about 60 miles with the R1T back on the first drive off-road. But on-road on the highway, I was surprised at how quiet the cabin was for a pickup truck with big 20-inch off-road tires. Did you have the same response, the same feeling?
So, yeah, I mean, it felt pretty quiet. This one had a wind noise leak on the passenger side. And so I was also on the 20-inch all-terrain tires, which don't help. But for an electric truck on 20-inch all-terrain tires, there was very little tire noise. The tires are very well suited to the vehicle. But there was wind noise, mostly because the seal wasn't lined up to the window perfectly. Yeah, that was the only quality issue on the entire truck.
Yeah, I was shocked.
It wasn't like an EQS in there, but it was fine. Oh, like, I thought it was great.
No. It's impossible for it to be an EQS. But I was just surprised at how good they isolated the noise for this big boxy pickup truck that must be traveling. I'm driving at 80, 85 miles an hour. You know, the wind, I expected the wind noise to be much worse.
Very
at
little
that
wind
speed.
Noise.
And it was, Rivian did a really good job at isolating the cabin and making it a nice, quiet, peaceful place to drive. And it's going to be interesting to see how that fares against the F-150 Lightning when I get a chance to drive that.
Yeah, so I took noise decibel readings from the Rivian, from the F-150 Power Boost, which is pretty much the same cab as the Lightning. We had a Power Boost on test to compare because it's the closest thing I could find to a Lightning.
That's the hybrid, right?
That's the hybrid one, but it still has the 7-kilowatt Pro Power on board and all that stuff. So I had that, and I compared it against a Tesla and some other things, and I haven't actually looked at what the data says yet, but. Yeah, we have the noise recordings, but our Rivian, that passenger window, it wasn't major, but it just needed to be sealed a little bit better. So I don't know 100% if that reading is going to be representative of what a Rivian could do.
Hey, so I was going to go through some of your videos and maybe hit some of the high points of the specific kind of things that you tested that maybe people will think about. So one of the first ones you did was taking the Rivian off-road on slippery, snowy roads. So I guess you got snow just after you got the truck?
Yeah, so my plan was to pick up the truck and then do a range test and a charging test right away just to, like, get it out of the way, just get all the long stuff out. And didn't work out so well because it just started to snow. And so we shot this whole, we just picked up the Rivian, what do you want to see video, and then eventually walked our way into, just tons of snow. Took it up the mountain and tried all the different off-road modes in slippery surfaces. And it was really fun to drive in the snow, I have to say. Really fun. There were a couple little niggles that I found. Really, two things. One is, in deep snow, you really want a lot of wheel rotation. You really want to keep the tires spinning. And even with the stability control off, there's no way to turn traction control off, just stability control. It didn't allow enough wheel spin in the deep stuff. Now, actually, I had it in snow on a separate occasion that will go in out of spec motoring probably next week. And it did much better because I had some speed with the vehicle on. So I wasn't just kind of crawling at 10, 20 miles an hour. I was doing 40, 50, bombing through snow. Truck was moving around. And it really did that in rally mode much better. The second issue I had with it was under regen braking at low speed on very steep inclines or declines. I don't know. basically, on a steep downhill, it would lock the wheels under regen at below 7 miles an hour. So, most regen systems in cars will control the regen movement, sort of like ABS will, to say, oh, we're locking, I'm going to back off on regen, and they can sort of emulate an anti-lock braking system with the motors. And then Rivian does that to about 7 miles an hour, and then they just lock everything. And so the rear axle would lock first. So you're going down it, and I was fine with it because it wasn't dangerous, but for me, but like a normal person, they wouldn't necessarily think to apply the accelerator pedal when you're trying to stop to unlock the wheel. And so what you really need to do is accelerator pedal, then hit the physical brakes to get into ABS. And that's just an odd movement. So they could use a little bit of fine tuning on this.
So you could trigger ABS actually and kind of have a more controlled descent.
Yeah. So in different modes, ABS responds differently too. So yeah, I didn't spend enough time really diving into how maybe they could engineer to fix this problem. But again, just software. And it's really only happened in the most extreme situation of a really steep downhill. Literally, other than that, in snow, ice, mud, this truck is a blast. There's a built-in rally mode, and you can like power out of corners, opposite lock. And then if you counter steer too much, like once you come across, you know, pretty much center point, it will start spinning up the front motors a little bit and pull you straight, and just great drivetrain control with stuff like that. And just so fun to just dance it around little angles around corners. It was great.
Dr. Sue says you need some fiber internet over there.
I have fiber internet.
You froze just for a moment, but we can still hear you. But
okay. Sorry anyway. About that. We have the max direct connection here.
Right. But yeah, we can only do what we can do here. So did you do any other like off-roady, like rock climbing kind of stuff with it? Like,
yep.
Oh, I guess you were in Moab, right?
Yep. So how
did you find the control of the motor control in that situation?
Yeah. So went over the LaSalle's, and perhaps, you know, the truck is so impressive to me on road. So I think where it really shines is its highway cruising, its efficiency and range. We'll talk about that, of course. Yep. And its performance driving characteristics. For light off-roading trails, things like this, it's wonderful, really wonderful. But when you really load it up, and I mean like really get, you know, wheels in the air, and then you're like, okay, I'd like if this truck doesn't make it here, like we're off a cliff, like when everything's on the line, and you're aired down and the tires are, you know, down, it is a bit unpredictable, I think is the only way to explain it. And it's with a lot. So here's the thing, going up and down hills, like I did baby lines back with it, it just walks its way up. It goes, it figures out where to send the power. It's really predictable. It's great at stuff like that. So the Moab stuff, it can actually do really well. It's more of the loose surface, you know, stuff that it's a little bit odd because you can't tell what motor is going to get what power until after you apply the throttle. So you're kind of trying to, in my mind, predict what the truck's going to do. Is it going to spin the front outside tire and I'm going to go this way? Or is it going to spin that tire and is it going to pull me up? And it's a little bit difficult. What kind of would be nice to see with these four motor systems is a way to mechanically lock them together. You know, Hummer EV and this have some logic to virtually lock the axles. So that, you know, when, you know, they can try and target the same wheel speed through motor control. Mm-hmm. But the problem is you have to have one wheel doing something different. Then you have to register that wheel is doing something different. Then you have to apply your logic to the other motor to either, you know, spin that up or maybe pull this one back a little bit. And it's not as good as just going axles locked and you know exactly what's coming.
So Rivian doesn't have like a button. You could just like to virtually lock the rear axle.
Right. And so there was some rumor that there may have been a clutch pack that could lock the rear motors on the Rivian. But I asked some engineers yesterday and they said, nope. And it doesn't drive. It has at least. If it does, then at least in my opinion is not enabled. I did not get any sense of rear wheels targeting the same speed. And maybe we're sounding a bit too negative about the Rivian because I'm left more blown away than any vehicle I've ever tested. Right. I think maybe ever. But I guess, you know, these are the things that maybe didn't make their way out in the video as much. So it's important to talk about them. But yeah, so four motors sounds really cool until you actually use them in practice. And then it's like, yeah, it's good for like the 90% of hardcore stuff. But when you really lay it all out there, it's a little bit odd as to where everything's going to go.
Interesting. Hey, Tom, when you drove off-road with it, Rivian too, right?
Yeah, but we, you know, it was obviously a course that Rivian had laid out, and it was pretty extreme, but not nearly as extreme as Kyle would take it. They wouldn't allow the journalists to drive, you know, in extreme conditions like what Kyle's talking about, like where, you know, you'd be in personal danger, you know. I mean, it was pretty aggressive, the course. You saw the video that I did, you know, where detailed. I mean, it was pretty gnarly, but I bet it was a notch or two less than what Kyle pushed it. And in our driving, it did everything. And, you know, Kyle just said, you know, the 90% of the off-roading, it does it flawlessly, maybe better than, you know, any truck he's driven. I don't know. But that was my experience. 100% of what we drove was probably within that 90% of what Kyle's talking about. And it did everything perfectly. Even we had some pretty steep, you know, where we were up the top of the mountain and then we started going down the other side. It was pretty steep. I didn't witness any type of, you know, brake lock or anything like that. The regen just handled it smoothly the whole way down, even though we were kind of skipping over one rock and jumping onto another one. It did it like, I mean, I said this when I did the first drive review, it made, you know, extreme off-roading easy. Like an amateur could do it because the car just, the vehicle, and that's funny. I just said the car. I had somebody, I was just on that press drive in Spain, which we'll talk about soon. And I was there with Roman from TFL, and we were just hanging out and talking, and he watches our podcast here all the time. And he said, Tom, he goes, just do me a favor. Stop calling trucks cars. And it's kind of like my go-to when I'm talking about a vehicle, and I'll say like the car reacted and it's right. A truck and that's wrong. And he's 100% right. But it was something that he pointed out because it drives me crazy. You always say car when you're driving a truck. And I just did it again. Sorry, Roman. I'm going to make a conscious effort to stop doing that. So anyway,
I think we should just make car equals vehicle.
Yeah. Well, that's how I've treated it. Right. That's how I've treated it. And it bothers him because he's a truck guy. So I'm going to try to appease my truck loving audience. And but as I was saying, the truck, when going down the hill, didn't have any hiccups. Everything it did, it performed flawlessly on our drive. But again, Kyle's going to push it further than any manufacturer would include in a normal press drive. So
Yeah, that's for sure. But also, like, you guys did some pretty crazy off-roading. I mean, it's not like you did like Hummer. It wasn't like this like you went out on trails.
Yeah.
And the truck is great at that stuff. It's really the loose surface, you know, when you're in mud, which that I just was like, give me more wheel spin and just, you know, lock the axles. I want to know where all the power is coming from. Don't just spin up the wheel that's stuck in the mud, spin up the other one, you know, immediately. Yeah. It will always get there. You just have to get some throttle on and let it figure itself out, which isn't as nice as just going locked and rocking. Go ahead, Tom.
To put into perspective, I mentioned this back when we did the first review, but maybe some of the listeners here didn't hear it. We had to bring a park ranger along with our media drive when I did the Rivian R1T drive. It was a requirement because they had to make sure we didn't do any damage to the environment. We had to stay on trails and so forth. And the park ranger, when we started this drive, was like, these are electric. Like, the trail that you selected is very, very difficult. Like, I would recommend you choose a different trail. And the Rivian people like, don't worry, we got this. And about halfway through, I mean, we drove, I don't know if it's 50 or 60 miles up, you know, to almost 14,000 feet in Colorado. Halfway through, we stopped for lunch or whatever. And the park ranger got out and said, how do we get one of these? they were like, I've never seen a truck. And we've seen everything comes through here. I've never seen a truck handle what you guys just drove through as easy as you did, where you didn't have to back up. You didn't have to get out and look and say, well, how am I going to handle this? It was just go. And it just found its way over the rocks and through the trails. And she was like, could we like get one of these? Could we like promote it for Rivian? If you give me one, I'll talk about how great it is. So, and this is a park ranger that, you know, sees everything go through there. So it's really capable.
Yeah. There's for sure more capability there than your average person will ever use. And you know, I'm left blown away with the Rivian. And I'm left needing to get one. So my current plan is
saying
to get
that Tom. The price is going up, Kyle.
Yeah. So
keep saying that.
Look, you know, if Tom charges me over sticker, that'll be a video. I got screwed by my good friend.
Oh, by the way, listen, I have somebody in Maryland that is a dealer there that has someone that wants to trade in a new R1T. I don't know the circumstance, but, and I don't know the trim, but they reached out to me to ask me how much should we give them and how much should I be selling it for? So if you're really interested, I could try to put you guys together because this was late last night. Evidently, I guess somebody just wants to flip it because that would be the only reason somebody would be trying to sell an R1T to a dealership.
And there's none in existence right now. I only want the ocean interior, the light interior.
Well, then it won't have it. Yeah,
then it's not going to have that.
Well, so you know that's what I ordered. So
you ordered the perfect spec.
Yeah,
yeah. Launch screen ocean.
So just to keep people up, who new readers or listeners up to speed, or watch your viewers up to speed. Tom, you have a Rivian R1T on order. That any idea when that's going to be coming?
October-ish. Before Rivian pulled that crazy stunt with raising the prices, then backtracking it. A lot of people canceled. Now, a lot of people then reordered. Right. But I am certain a good percentage of people said, you know what? They broke the trust. I'm not coming back. I'm canceling for good. So the last email I got was in the October timeframe. That was before they did all that. I wouldn't be surprised if that gets pushed up because, you know, 10 or 15% of the reservation holders canceled. We'll see. I mean, they could also, you know, continue to have manufacturing issues and, you know, not make them as quickly as they planned. So that might then push it back, but it could be before October is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Right. We have a lot of car logistics to do coming up. We're buying a few over the next few months. And so, need to find a Rivian, but not a huge rush. Mm-hmm. Just waiting for the right spec. Thankfully, we have some friends in town here that are literally getting theirs today. And we have Alyssa's cousin who got his last week in Michigan. So we have access to the trucks if we need to use them for anything. So in terms of a video purpose, us getting one wouldn't really add anything. We can do everything we need to with locals. And you know, of course, Rivian, if they have an on, they would do it for something. But it's like they're not just going to keep a media vehicle in Denver, I don't think.
Right.
Can I just talk about really quick how much I love this truck? Because I feel like I've like complained about all the stuff.
No.
It's so freaking good. It's insanely fast. It drives so great. I had a whole driving review that went up yesterday. And you know what's nice about it is it has Spotify built in. You just get in. Everything works like a Tesla. It's got the same chimes as a Tesla, which is the right way to do it, in my opinion. Get in, throw it in gear, and go. And no boot up times, almost no software glitches in 3,000 miles. Right up to the very end, it had a little thing, but there's a little reset thing you can do with the scroll wheels. I'm just blown away by the quality and by how well a brand new product from a brand new company worked. Also, I took it on a trip, you know, from here in Fort Collins to Phoenix and back, and had not one even hiccup with charging infrastructure.
Oh, nice. Hey, that's nice. That's a bonus.
That's really good.
So speaking of like taking long trips, let's talk about the range on this thing. So it's got like 135 kilowatt hour battery, I believe, right?
Well, that's, I think, the gross battery pack. Yep.
Okay. So what are we working with in that, you think?
I was able to pull 125 out of it, and I heard, 126, 125-ish, and I heard like 127, 128 is all you can get out of it.
Okay. So what's
very close to the Lightning, by the way? The Lightning with the extended range battery pack has a usable capacity of 131. So really close. You know, the Lightning's bigger, but you know, it's got a couple more kilowatt hour.
And what size wheels on the Rivian R1T?
We had the 20-inch wheels with the all-terrain tires, which according to Rivian say you get a 10 to 15% reduction going for this. But it still almost matched the EPA range of 314 miles on the highway on the not good wheels.
Right. So you did your test up in Nebraska or something?
That same loop I always do. I leave from Wellington, Colorado, go up to Wyoming, over to Nebraska, over and back down. So very, very typical loop. And really just impressed with the range. There's a conserve mode in the truck that airs it all the way down that basically deactivates the rear motors. It runs the front motors. They're permanent magnet motors, so I don't think you can actually shut them off, but they torque sleep them somehow. Someone thought that maybe there was a clutch to disconnect the rear motors in conserve mode, and I did not feel it reconnecting when I would switch modes. So I think they just, you know, eat a little bit of drivetrain loss by the permanent magnet situation. Because, of course, with induction motors, you can just completely, you know, shut off power to them. And it did 290 miles pretty much on those at 70 miles an hour constant, which is pretty impressive.
Kyle, so, you know what makes it more impressive to me? And I'm a little confused about this. I have to dig a little bit into this. From what I understood, Rivian used the 5-cycle EPA range test, not the 2-cycle. And as we both note, when automakers use the 5-cycle, we typically can't get near the EPA range rating because it usually delivers a less realistic number. Like if an automaker were to do it on a 2-cycle and a 5-cycle, the 5-cycle range rating would be slightly higher than the 2-cycle. We've talked about this with Tesla forever, that every Tesla uses a 5-cycle test, and all of our range tests deliver between 10 and 13% less range than the EPA range rating. Yet on other makers that use the 2-cycle test, we get closer. Sometimes we exceed it. So it really, you know, when I heard that they were using the 5-cycle test, and it was what's the range rated? 314, I think. I was thinking you were going to come in at like 265.
That's what I thought too. I'm like we're going to be mid 200s here. It's going to be great. And then the thing just kept going.
I don't get it. And we know this stuff. You and I live range tests, and you know we know going in kind of where we're going to end up, and we're pretty darn good at guessing it. You know, I mean, every now and then off by a little bit, but I was shocked that the thing just kept going to 292. The fact that they used a 5-cycle test.
It was a perfect test, really. We had tailwind on the way out, headwind on the way back. It was no traffic, literally no traffic. So it was just 70 straight into the wind, nonstop, sunny skies. I had the whole video, like if you want to watch the entire test, there is an almost 6-hour long live stream. You can watch the whole thing that I walk through everything that we're doing in real time. And I think I'll keep doing those. They're kind of fun to do.
I was watching when I was at the airport.
That's right.
Going to Spain, which was pretty cool.
Tom was keeping me company. We were talking back and forth on the live stream. It was great.
And one of the things that I really liked, and I want to thank the Out of Spec followers, when I was asking you questions, you were answering me, but you were getting so many questions you couldn't answer all of them, you know, and whenever you didn't answer one of the questions that I asked, your followers would say, "Hey, Kyle, Tom wants to know this." And if you didn't answer it, somebody else would say, "Kyle, did you see Tom's question?" It was like they were prioritizing my questions over their own questions. That's awesome. I thought that was really cool. And I want to thank the Out of Spec followers. But it was just a great video. I mean, and I had time to kill sitting at the airport. So I was just watching it. And I felt like I was in the car with you. You know, right. We did do one range test together, Kyle and I, years ago. We did the Mini Cooper SE. Range test. Yeah, exactly. And that was funny. Although that was before we had settled in on a 70 mile. Kyle and I had discussions, you know, a couple of years ago about what should the speed be. You know, Bjorn does certain speed tests over in Europe, and we wanted to do something that was a little different than what anybody else was doing. And when we did this range test, if you remember, we did it at 50 miles an hour or 55.
It was terrible.
We decided we can't drive on the highway at 55 miles an hour. So then we said, okay, let's settle in on 70. That seems to be a good highway speed, maybe not quite as fast as what everybody drives, but at least we should be able to maintain it, because on a lot of roads we can't maintain 80 miles an hour on many roads. So 70 was something that we thought we could, and it seemed to work because it seems like it's that sweet spot there. And one other thing I want to comment on, Nathan Green asked before, Tom, will you be getting your F-150 Lightning first or your R1T? I'll be getting the F-150 Lightning first, Nathan. At least I should. That would be my build date is supposed to be May 16th. So it's like 2 weeks from now, 2 months from now is when, you know, I should be getting the F-150 Lightning sometime the end of May, which, you know, I'm on schedule for October-ish for the Rivian. So I should have the Lightning for a while before I get the R1T. Although I have, as Kyle mentioned, friends now are getting R1Ts delivered. One of my good friends here in New Jersey got his delivered last week while I was in Spain. And I'm going to get together with him this week, and we're going to do some things together. So I'll have an R1T here.
Oh, by the way,
when I get my Lightning.
Before you do your charging stuff, let's talk, because there's some interesting things you got to do to get this to charge properly.
Okay.
Yeah, we figured it out. But what Jordan's here too. We figured it out at what, 2 a.m. right before we returned it.
Yeah, 2 a.m.
We were up at the EVgo station in Denver just playing around with stuff. And then we finally got the theoretical maximum curve. Cool. So we know what that thing can take now. But that was not easy.
Yeah. Are we talking about how we did it?
No. Okay. Well, like, the video goes up today. Okay. So after this, we're going to crunch all the numbers. And Jordan, your microphone face is wonderful, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
I don't know how we're going to work this. Anyway, Jordan spent a lot of time with the Rivian as well. I guess the one last thing I want to note on the range is I spent a lot of highway driving in this vehicle. I actually drove about 1,000 miles from Phoenix back to Fort Collins, hammering through straight in one go. And it is an awesome road tripping truck. It gets insane range. Like what we saw in the range test translates to real life. Like this thing's magical somehow for a truck. And the fact that it's not even the biggest battery. If Rivian just said, this is the biggest battery, I'd be happy. I wouldn't even question it. I'd be like, this is great. But now that they have a max pack, I'm like, oh, I kind of want the big one.
Oh, really?
So, well, yeah, I think the move is get a large pack now. Don't delay. Right. And then trade it for a max pack later.
Yeah, because that's going to take a while before they're available.
Yeah,
and it depends if you drive a lot and if you trailer things. So, and speaking of trailer, you did a whole video with trailers and stuff, right?
We did a couple videos. One is posted. Another is to come.
Okay. Yep. So let's talk about like what you did on this trailering thing.
This was another one we started at midnight.
Yeah, this was okay. In the later night.
Yeah, this one I didn't sleep that night actually. Yeah. That was a full all-nighter because the next day we were at the runway.
Yep.
Basically, what did we do? We decided we only had very limited time at the truck and we're like, we got to get all this stuff. So we found D&E sales in Fort Collins. They sell trailers. They're like, guys, we see your videos. Like, if you ever need to borrow a trailer, come by and just take whatever you want. So we took a bunch of trailers from them. And one of them was this utility trailer that we thought was the most sort of aerodynamic, you know, just air flows through. Now, granted, there is a back gate on there, which is sort of like a wind stop, but, you know, it's constant both ways.
Right.
So we loaded the truck up with, to maximum the trailer could take, about 3,000 pounds in total. With it on back. And then we ran the loop from Wellington to Cheyenne and back, our typical MPG or efficiency test loop. And the truck did 1.something miles per kilowatt hour. I don't really remember what the numbers were. So you can see we loaded up the sand manually.
Yeah. 60 pound bags.
Yep.
Awesome.
And strapped it down sort of, and then went for the loop. Then we decided to take all the weight out of the trailer and put a giant wind buffer on the back, sort of an air catch. And the idea was to just, in worst case scenario, show that weight doesn't really matter when towing with an electric truck as much as aerodynamics of the trailer. And we've said this a million times, but we've never been able to point to, hey, we've actually done this. We've known this. But we decided to do a little Mythbusters action through the middle of the night. And we put basically this giant wind catch on the back of this trailer, and it did way less efficiency. It was like 0.7 or 0.8 miles per kilowatt hour with no weight, but just the aero drag.
And we're looking at the on-screen towing screen there now. Anything about that you want to mention while we're on that?
The towing's awesome. We towed like a pretty big, beefy trailer with the Tesla Model 3 inside of it. And we compared the costs against F-150 and talked about how they towed differently too. So we did a sort of an electric versus combustion cost towing test. And I won't give away the results, but basically the Rivian tows amazing. It's got built-in trailer brake controller that you can do through the software, which I've never seen before. I've always seen these separate units that you can squeeze and adjust your gain through the head unit, but I've never had a steering wheel brake control. And I thought that it was probably the best tow vehicle that's electric that I've ever used. Of course, I think that goes without saying.
Right.
It's so confidence inspiring. It's got all the power and torque in the world, but of course your range suffers massively with a trailer on the back. And then we get into the whole charging station design while towing, which is they're not designed for trailers. Although Electrify America just announced their new pull-through thing, so that would help a lot. And they even have an EV with a trailer in their promotional material. Basically, towing with an EV is sort of the Wild West right now, and it's going to continue to be for some time to come.
Sure. So right now our viewers are looking on the screen, and that's an impressive wind stop you had on the back of that utility trailer, like a big sheet of plywood. Bizarre, like it looks pretty secure.
Well, we were just running around Powerhouse at 1 o'clock in the morning looking for anything we could use to just block wind.
Right.
We did not plan this.
So again, I maybe you said it and I missed it. So what was like the overall difference like with this thing? I don't know
the numbers off the top of my head. It's okay. In this video.
Okay.
But it was significantly less efficient by, you know, like a large gap between the aero and the weight.
Right. So aero is more important than weight is what
yes, that's basically all we were trying to prove is weight does have some effect because the truck was significantly less efficient with just the trailer on it. Right. But in terms of the percentage of a difference between a heavy trailer and an empty trailer that doesn't weigh very much, you really want an empty trailer that has a bad aerodynamic profile. You really want an aerodynamic trailer to tow behind your electric vehicle.
And we want pull-through electric chargers.
Yeah, bring it now.
Right.
And in Colorado, I don't think we have any chargers that are equipped for towing that I've ever seen.
Okay. Right on.
Other than the Tesla superchargers, which have tow stalls.
Yeah, we figured out how to make these work, but we just had to take up like the 8 parking spaces to the right of the charger.
Yeah. The assumption is if you're going to tow with an EV, do it through the middle of the night when parking lots are empty.
Right, for now. Yeah, I haven't. And you said Electrify America has a new pull through stands coming.
Yeah, so Electrify America announced their new hardware, which I think all known is coming, and so that's exciting. But they also announced what their vision is for the future of electric fueling stations look like, and it looks just like a gas station, and it was beautiful, and their pull throughs, and I'm like, this is what we've been needing.
They have lounges?
I didn't really read that far into it.
Okay.
I think they do have lounges. The idea is.
I just mentioned that because I missed that. I missed that somehow, that thing, that piece of news. Because I've been busy, right, myself. But Porsche has announced this week, and that was one of our news things, that it's going to start its own charging network, but it's going to be very Porsche. And part of that thing is, you know, lounges, like maybe, you know, posh lounges for Porsche owners.
Yeah, well, we've seen Audi, do this in Europe with that charging pilot in Munich. Okay. Which is pretty interesting. We're going over to see that in a couple months, which will be cool. Our friend Dustin Krause is here, and he says a Airstream R1T coast-to-coast road trip. When will it happen? As soon as possible.
Dustin's in the comments?
Dustin's in the Facebook comments.
Oh, there he is.
Yep.
Airstream R1T coast-to-coast road trip, right?
We got to have Dustin on the podcast sometime.
Right. He's with Automaker, right?
Yes, but maybe we shouldn't say.
Okay.
Actually, no, everyone knows because I've done an interview with him. He's basically the electric guy for Volkswagen of America.
Oh, so I feel like if I want to derail from our topic for a minute, I'll leave it at the end. Maybe hopefully he'll stick around because there's some Volkswagen news I really wanted to talk about. Okay. What else is there? Anything about the speaker? You have a whole video just on like on the camp speaker. Which...
That's this guy's department right here.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Solid speaker.
Jordan Scheifer, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. It's just great that the speaker is integrated with the truck, which I guess could be bad because then if you sell the truck, you lose your speaker. I don't know. I don't know if they sell it separately, but if they don't, they should.
They will eventually.
Because people will buy it. I mean, it's really? It's genuinely a good speaker. It's not just like this Easter egg thing hidden in the center console and it's like, you know, it plays sound. They bought off Alibaba or something. No, it's like actually... bespoke Rivian in-house design using parts from Timpani, like which is a renowned speaker manufacturer. So it really is good. And me and Kyle tested it.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, we put it outside while we were waiting for the trailer towing stuff. While we put it outside, walked like 50 yards from it, and it was still sounding great.
We woke up the city of Wellington with our music.
Yeah, exactly.
And like the truck, you can use you can charge things with the truck, right? But you can also charge things with the speaker.
Exactly. And we had a real world case where we were on the airstrip doing drag videos, and like the phone that captured the video at the launch was dying. And I was like, oh, I have this Bluetooth speaker in the Rivian. I can pull out and charge the phone.
Also made the Rivian faster.
Dropped 5.7 pounds or whatever it weighs. Yeah.
But did you test the flashlight, the LED flashlight in the driver's door?
Yep.
We also use that with the trailers.
Yep. That was useful, actually.
Timon used it when he was strapping down the trailer, and it's really bright. and the camp speaker has a light in it that's useless.
Oh, really?
So yeah, I mean, a lot of comments on the video point out like the light on the camp speaker is just what you want if it is a really dark campground, because you don't want to disrupt anything. And there's already people that are like hating on the fact that you can have a Bluetooth speaker in the woods. They're oh, you're ruining camping.
Camping, I mean, leave it in the truck.
Different for different people.
what was I going to say about that? There's something else about that speaker that was.
Well, you know what's cool about it is that when you put it into its compartment, it actually locks in. And whenever the truck's in park, you can just pull it out. It's got a latch that automatically unlocks and locks with the truck's gear selection.
That's which is great. Smart engineering.
It's easy to pull it out. And I was concerned, like, what if you romp on the brakes and the speaker just flies into the...
goes the speaker.
It's locked, and it gets software updates through the truck automatically.
Right, that's the craziest thing. You plug it into the truck, and you can software update the speaker.
That's what I wanted to mention. OTAs, over-the-air updates for just the speaker itself. So, and they're going to be getting some, too, right? I think they're going to do something with the lighting, actually, in OTA.
Yeah. Kristen just did a comment mentioning that because, the speaker, the default light is just like this amber color that you would see in a lantern, but it can flash other colors, especially when you're pairing or doing other things. That's how it tells you what it's doing. And so the RGB capability is already in the speaker. So it would be an easy thing to add with over-the-air updates.
Really, the truck's thoughtfulness after spending the week with it is all there. You know, one thing that I think I really appreciate it is, you know, when you lock a car and it goes, or like you get these annoying lock sounds, this makes a nice little bird chirping noise when you lock it. And I'm like, that's wonderful. No one knows my truck just locked, but I know because I know this one bird, and it's a legit recording of a bird from somewhere that an engineer took while he was on vacation.
Yeah.
And now that's the lock sound for a Rivian.
I like that idea very much.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Awesome. Like, why do cars need to make these terrible beeping noises when you lock them?
Right. I just love how the startups, all of them, just start with a clean sheet of paper. And they don't just do things the way it's always been done. They question everything. You know, and that goes for Tesla. We know Tesla was a pioneer in this. Lucid now, Rivian, you know, they don't take anything for granted. And that's, you know, what's going to be such a difficult task for the legacy brands to overcome these startups, because they don't start with any, you know, handicap. Everything's a clean sheet of paper, and they come up with this, like, you know, detachable Bluetooth speaker, like, and you know, any of the luxury, the existing brands could have done that years ago, you know, but nobody thought of it. And just like, you know, actual recording of a bird, like, you know, it's cool. And people like that, you know, and, you know, it's going to be a hurdle for the legacy brands to overcome. It really is. In my opinion, they can't have that, you know, clear mind and start from a clean sheet of paper, because they've been just doing this for so long and incrementally improving on their product. That's their mindset. Just improve what we've done before, not come up with any bold new ideas. And that's going to be a hurdle for them now, which this electrification transition.
And it seems like they know their customer base. I mean, the whole flashlight in the door thing, you know, some engineer had this idea. They're like, you know, the umbrellas and the doors of the Rolls Royce, let's do that. But our customers don't care about umbrellas. They want to be out in the rain in the elements. Give them a flashlight. And it's a genuinely good flashlight. It wasn't like a cheapo thing they just shoved in the door. Like, it's all good. It's actually the 7,777th battery cell of the so awesome.
Yeah.
Froze up there for a second. So yeah, it's got the same battery that's in the battery pack, power in the flashlight. Yeah. Yeah. So we want to talk about some other stuff, so we should probably move on from Rivian, but you do have more Rivian content coming out on Out of Spec Reviews and maybe Out of Spec Motoring, including your drag strip, drag race, I guess.
We call it Rivian versus Everything with EV capitalized is going to be the title.
Anything you want to say about that at all yet? No, or just like
Rivian's really fast.
Okay. There you go.
Right on. But we drag raced it against almost every EV on the market, excluding a couple that we couldn't get our hands on. But we had almost 20 cars there. So it was pretty sweet. And we got a cool thumbnail. The video may not have been shot wonderfully because we only had a couple hours before we had to get off. Yeah. But the thumbnail looks good. And I just want to, if we're going to finish up on Rivian, there's one last thing I really want to touch on here, which is the one vehicle that can do it all has never really happened before, in my opinion, at least with electric. There's always been some sort of compromise. Sure. And There are compromises with the Rivian, don't get me wrong, but it's at least the closest vehicle I've ever driven that can do everything. And what's crazy about it is just how great of a driver it is from, you know, my driving enthusiast standpoint, just shredding it up a back road. And I'm coming out of corners with opposite lock in a 7,000 pound pickup truck. And we're talking about how great the steering is. Like, you would never expect this. And just really, really love the thing. By the way, we also have another video coming that I'm excited about. Alyssa took the dogs and did a whole how's the Rivian for dog owners, which I think is very relevant because everyone who's getting a Rivian should have a dog at least.
We didn't mention the gear tunnel at all. Did you use that during your test much? Did it come in handy?
Yeah, the gear tunnel is like the most useful storage space on the truck. You just throw stuff in there. And then the thing is, because it's so long, everything flies out of whatever you had it in. So the trick to unload the gear tunnel is you pull in a parking lot and just do a donut to the right, you know, just crank it hard. And then all your stuff is at that door. Otherwise, you're like climbing through the gear tunnel to get everything.
Right.
But
on.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you see Rivian owners pull into a charging station, they're like, it's just because they got to get something out of the gear tunnel.
Right.
Just to put a cherry on the Rivian Sunday, you know, Kyle talked about how impressed he was with it. And obviously, you know, you could hear his enthusiasm. He wants to buy one. You know, this follows
yours. Yeah,
this follows my experience. Now, you know, Kyle also mentioned earlier, we're very lucky and we really are that we get to drive all these vehicles in really cool situations. Sometimes we get flown all over the world to drive them before anybody else can. You know, it's a good gig if you can get it. Don't get me wrong. But the R1T, after I did the R1T drive, I immediately came home and ordered mine. I hadn't ordered one before I did that press drive. And I get to drive everything, guys. I mean, you know, every type of vehicle that's out there. And I've never done a media drive and ended with saying, I have to have this vehicle, except after I did the R1T. Now, I've wanted vehicles. I've said, you know,
sure.
You know, this is really good. This will fit into the household. Maybe I should get one. But I've never like rushed home and immediately pulled out my laptop and said, you know, I'm buying this thing, even if I don't really know how I'm going to pay for it at this moment. Because don't forget, at that time, I'd already reserved an F-150 Lightning, which is an $80,000 vehicle. And now I'm saying, okay, I'm going to commit to another $80,000 vehicle a couple months later. And, you know, I'm not begging over here, but you know, I'm not in a position to spend, you know, $160,000 on
that's vehicles. Okay. Let us pay for the Rivian months. For you.
Yeah, and I know then, you want to pre-buy it so your name's on the registration.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned, you know, and everybody knows this, I'm going to have both vehicles. I'm going to drive them for a while. Then I'm going to decide which one I'm going to keep. And the whole wild card here is my wife also gets a say. And, you know, I'm thinking that I'm going to be torn between the two because I really like the F-150 Lightning and I love the Mega Power Frunk. I will use that thing so much. Whereas with the R1T, the Frunk, in my opinion, is a lot less useful because you have to lift stuff up over the grill and put in there. I have a bad back. Nothing more than 20 or 30 pounds for me is getting lifted up and put in that because then you have to reach out over to pick it out also. But with the F-150 Lightning, the whole grill lifts up and you could slide stuff in at your belt line. So to me, it's much more useful. It's got a bigger area in the back, can hold more cargo. But again, as I said, my wife's partial is involved with this decision. I'm thinking the plush interior of the R1T and the fact that it's smaller, maybe easier to maneuver, might lean her towards that. So we'll see, Kyle. This is going to be fun. I'm sure we're going to be talking about it a lot once I have both of them and I keep going back and forth. Did I say car again, Petro? Oh no, Roman's going to be so pissed.
So what's interesting is, yeah, so we had a few people comment already that they have reservations looking to sell, which I think is interesting from their perspective. So I don't think we will have trouble getting a truck. We might have trouble getting a truck at selling price. But,
and the spec that you want also.
Right.
Yeah, and we're open to spec really when it comes to it because I think I might just go ahead and order one anyway, like today, and just order the max pack with all the stuff that I want as the keeper. And we might just do, you know, a large pack now to make some videos with or whatever. But by far, I think it's the truck that appeals to me most. It's the vehicle that The electric vehicle that I think is most intriguing. You guys know I'm a huge Taycan lover, and so that does not affect the plans for our Taycan, but that is a very long process to get an allocation from the dealer, paint a sample, do that process, and that's a keeper. And so that this does not affect that decision, but excited for the R1T to come. Sad to get back. But
yeah,
we did drive home in an XT40 Recharge, which didn't suck.
That was okay.
That was nice.
Right, right. You've had a bunch of cars over this week, right? You've had the XT40 Recharge. You've had the Kia EV6.
Who's our camera work? He took the EV6 skiing. And we all know Timon doesn't like electric cars, like at all. And he loved the EV6. He's like, I would totally drive this.
Nice. Nice.
Yep.
So, Tom, you actually went to Europe this week, Spain, to be precise, and got to spend some time behind the wheel of the Nissan Ariya. Now, I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about this car. But first, this wasn't like a regular first drive program per se, was it? Like, I saw it referred to something somewhere as like a preview. So maybe set the stage for us to start.
Yeah. So, from what I got from Nissan, it appears as though, you know, this was planned for a European first drive. And the North American Nissan folks were like, hey, we need to get people in this vehicle. You can't do this big full-on press drive. And we've never even sat in a car over here. So it was kind of added to their program. And it was really compressed. Flew over to Spain, to Madrid, for like a day and a half, and then flew back. So it was a tough drive, and we weren't allowed to take the cars on streets.
Right.
So Nissan rented out the Circuito del Yarama, which is the Yarama racetrack in Madrid. It's about 3 mile long racetrack. And
it's big.
You know, we were allowed to do a couple of laps. So wow. I spent like 18 minutes driving it.
Know the Nissan Ariya is the performance vehicle that is honed for extreme track use.
And Kyle, it gets worse. It would have been the all-wheel drive e-Force.
Oh, Ariya. Wasn't the E-Force? Wait,
they didn't have an all-wheel drive on there? They had like the 9 second to 60 thing.
Guys. Front wheel drive, small battery pack.
Two laps, you're done.
Yeah, do you even have enough range to do a lap?
So here's the thing. We were allowed to do six laps. After five laps, I pulled into the pit and they're like, no, 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 you got one more lap. I'm like, I'm done. just parked it.
That sounds like the biggest waste of 3 days you could ever give someone.
Oh yeah. And get up and close. Honestly, they had the track set up where we weren't just spinning around the track. They had certain sections of the track set up where you stopped and then weaved in and out of cones to like simulate a tight city street. And then, you know, for another quarter mile, it was, a launch. And then for another quarter mile, it was an ass. Like, so it wasn't just driving circles six times. They had the course set up the best they could. And I want to give the Nissan folks, a little credit here because, Nissan North America, they really had to like push to get us even included to fly us over there to get some seat time so we could sit in the cars, take pictures of the car. So, I'm not going to kill them on this. Was it a great press drive? No, it really was a poor press drive, but give us an opportunity to touch the vehicle, see the materials. So for that, it was worth it. I didn't even record a video. It wasn't worth it. I was going to do a walk around, and then I saw Kyle has an Inside EV's walk around video, which is outstanding.
Right.
I wasn't going to beat that. He did a super job on this, months ago. So I was just going to basically do the same thing, just walk around to talk about the vehicle. So, if you're interested in really seeing all the Ariya walk around and options and features, check out the Inside EV's YouTube channel. Kyle did that a few months back. So I'm just going to write a first drive review. No ProPilot assist on the vehicle. Like I said, the 63 kilowatt hour battery pack, it's 66 usable for the small pack. 66 total kilowatt hour, 63 usable. The large pack is 91 total, 87 usable. Again, those weren't there. Now, Nissan, these packs are liquid cooled. They switched to CCS for North America and Europe. The Aria is still going to have CHAdeMO in China, in Japan, and you know, in China, it'll have the Chinese standard. But it's, you know, Nissan's transitioning from CHAdeMO to CCS for Europe and North America. And as for charging, supposedly we weren't allowed to charge. I asked repeatedly if they could carve out some time for me to charge it. It just wasn't able. They said we might be able to get you a level 2 charger. I'm like, thanks. No. But as far as charging,
you went all the way to Spain for this.
I know.
It's a lot. But
well, I'll tell you what, the business class round trip Spain ticket is going to push me over the limit that I need. So I know I'm going to get 1K status on United this year. So well, that was worth it for lounge that. But it wasn't terrible. It was actually a good opportunity to talk to the Nissan folks, ask some questions about the vehicle, and kind of as a prep for when they come here, which should be in a few months. They're going to have them here in the U.S. and do like a proper media drive here in the U.S. So this was just kind of like a short take. My initial impressions, you know, I'm trying to figure out where this vehicle fits in. Nissan announced the Aria before Volkswagen announced the ID4, before Ford announced the Mach-E, before the Ioniq 5 was announced, before the EV6 was announced. And all those vehicles were announced and launched before Aria hits the market. So it's kind of like we've got these four really good all-electric crossovers that are direct competitors to the Aria, including the Model Y. But let's push that to the side for a minute. So where does it fit? And it's hard for me to really say distinctively, this is this. You know, it's kind of a more luxurious ID4. The interior materials are nicer. I think it might even have a nicer layout than ID4. You know,
it could have been an Infiniti. Why make it a Nissan? It's nice to be an
Infiniti. It is premium, right?
It is premium. That brand.
It's got a premium feel. Yeah.
It does have a premium feel. Infiniti, it doesn't have a lot of headroom.
Brand.
The headroom up front, I found a little lacking. The rear leg room was fine, but there's no real there's not enough room under the front seats, say for your feet to slide under. I think it missed a lot of the marks for me. And you know, driving a front wheel drive, you know, small battery pack version on a track was kind of like, really? We did get to drive.
How disconnected Nissan is from what this car really is.
We did get to ride in, not drive. They had a Leaf Mule with Aria e-Force.
Right.
Dominic's been in it.
Technology in it. So, and that's the all-wheel drive technology that is, it's supposed to provide a smoother driving experience.
Right.
With a lot of people complain about motion sickness in electric vehicles, especially ones that are powerful and have a strong regenerative braking. You're kind of doing this. Now, the driver doesn't get that because they know what's coming and their brain figures that out. But the passengers, just from going back and forth, I know people that I drive in my Model 3 that ask me to take it down a notch because they feel motion sickness. So the Nissan, their new all-wheel technology is supposed to eliminate that feeling and smooth out the jerkiness. And you know, and even under high performance situations, and from what I felt, we did this, we rode in this test mule on the track where we rode with it off and then they turned it on and did the same track. And I can tell you, it made a huge difference. The car felt so much smoother without really sacrificing acceleration or much regenerative braking force.
What you're giving up is throttle response. The reason you feel this motion is because drivers don't know how to keep their foot steady. Yeah. So your throttle region. I was with a guy. This is not an impression of a Hummer. This is an impression of the guy driving the Hummer. But he was making everyone in the truck car sick. His girl, whoop, and I actually snuck a video of the power gauge because I don't know this guy, but it was terrible. And this is all down to the driver. So are you saying that they've basically numbed the throttle to the point where inputs no longer affect power and regen?
It's which axle gets regen and power first. So like slowing down, the regen might kick in first on the rear. So you're not pitching forward so much.
Yeah, it's not that simple, Kyle.
Right.
Okay. As just, you know, shaving off the power. It's a complex and we'll get into it more when we do a deep dive into that. You know, we didn't have time to do a real deep dive when we were there. They just wanted to show us the direction that they're moving in. And it's not just for straight line driving. It really has a lot of effect when you're kind of hitting the turns and everything. It really transfers the power correctly. So it feels really smooth. And at least on this test mule, it really worked. But let's see when we get to drive it properly.
Did they have any Aria all wheel drives there?
No.
Is the Aria all wheel drive coming at a later date? A
little bit later. The front wheel drive version is going to be early fall. All wheel drive version is going to be late fall. And both versions you can get with either the 63 kilowatt hour pack or the 87 kilowatt hour pack.
Right.
The front wheel drive large pack is going to have the longest range. It's going to be EPA rated at around 300 miles. We don't have, you know, any, it's all estimates at this point. And obviously the small battery all-wheel drive will have the shortest range. But it was a quick trip. It was a quick, just a little taste of what the vehicle can have. Again, we can try any ADAS. None of that was enabled on the vehicle. So ProPilot Assist 2.0, you know, it wasn't a proper drive. It was just a little quick taste to get the pictures and first impressions out there in the media. So, you know, I hope people didn't come to this today expecting a real comprehensive driving experience like Kyle. I didn't have it for 8 days like Kyle did. I felt like I had it for 8 minutes.
Right.
And, but it wasn't much longer than it did.
It's like the first chance.
That was about 18 minutes, Kyle.
It's like the first chance to actually drive the vehicle. Yeah. That's why I put it in the thumbnail, because it's, you know, it's like you said, everyone else has had announced their vehicles and put them out there already. And so this is a bit slow getting to the starting line with this one. But yeah,
I don't see the relevance for this car in the marketplace, like Tom mentioned. I was thinking today, actually, when I was showering, I'm like, I can't wait for our Nissan review, because I think we're going to start it with, here are all the cars you can buy. And then it's going to be someone going, no, I don't want any of those. Give me the new Nissan Aria. And we'd be like, what?
It doesn't do any, like, it was a good vehicle. I mean, I liked it, but it's now in a sea of these crossovers that are all priced about the same. So that makes it that much harder to really get excited about it. It doesn't do anything poorly. I thought it felt great. The seating position and comfort was great. I think it looks really nice. Also, I like it better now that I've sat in it and seen it up. I still don't love the front grille, but I know people do like the styling, and I think it's just going to be, it's another option for people to choose from.
But will it bomb? Do anything better than any other car?
That's the thing. It doesn't, but it doesn't necessarily do anything worse, Kyle. So, you know, like, you know, it kind of just fits in. And I think it's just another flavor of these crossovers. I mean, crossovers account for about 33% of the US market now. So there's room for more. You know,
they'll lease out well. Nissan finance that part.
You know, and people coming in with expiring rogue leases, you know, if the Nissan dealers do a decent job of being able to communicate the value of it, they'll end up in an Aria. You know, so I certainly don't expect it to bomb, but it's not going to be like this breakout vehicle. We talked a little bit earlier about the fact that the startups, you know, have these unique ideas and they have these new concepts that nobody came out with. This doesn't move the needle, the Aria. It's another nice option between 40,000 and 58,000, you know, depending on the battery and that's the same. It's another Mach-E, ID4, Ioniq 5, EV6. That's what it is. It's a Nissan flavor of those vehicles. They all are just a little bit different. And that's, as far as I'm concerned, I'm fine with that, because people buy these, you know, millions of them a year, these crossovers, and give us another one. And, you know, but at some point, you know, somebody has to be, you know, distinctive. And this wasn't, this didn't say, wow, you know, I would buy this over this vehicle because of this reason. It's just kind of another one with a Nissan badge and different styling.
Well, it's got distinctive styling. So it's got that, and it'll have a premium feel. And some people will feel, you know, it's a good value for them. It's a good fit for them. So
So Bryce,
on the market.
Bryce just said, why get it when you can get the Lyric? So the Lyric is more expensive. Yeah. It's definitely, you know, a step above, yeah, one or two steps above luxury wise. But in my opinion, if you could afford a Lyric, it's a better buy. I mean, I sat in the Lyric at $59.9 for that launch edition version. It is an unbelievable deal. You know, much better deal than a Model Y at this point, especially now that Tesla raised the price. If you could get one of those launch editions for $59.9, the Lyric might be the best buy in this category. The Lyric's bigger than these other crossovers we're talking about, except maybe the Model Y. It might be close to the Y. It might even be bigger than the Y, but the Lyric's bigger. It has a bigger battery. It's going to probably charge better with the Ultium battery pack. That to me might be the way to go if you're looking for a vehicle in that section, right?
But you know who's nailed it? Oh, you have something to say.
Well, yeah, the elephant in the room. What could set the Aria apart would be the Nissan Aria Cross Cabriolet.
Oh, yes.
If we could get that, then I would buy one.
Me too.
A lot of people would buy them. I would go to a first drive, front wheel drive, small battery pack on a track for that car.
And only drive it backwards.
There's a lot to be said for taking the roof off of a car as you're, you know, driving along. And
Nissan Aria Cross Cab, that's the magical size.
If anyone in the comments is really good at rendering, just Photoshop one and we'll post it.
We'll post it everywhere. That'll be my phone screen background because we all know I'm the biggest Nissan Murano Cross Cabriolet enthusiast. I take a picture every time I see one. They're so terrible. They're amazing. And you need to be qualified with an F1 driving license just to get in the vehicle. Yeah. Anyway, what I was going to say is, you know who's doing crossovers really well?
Hyundai?
Hyundai? Model Y.
Hyundai.
Yeah, it's Hyundai. But Tesla has just smoked everyone. They built the right car, and everyone wants it, and they keep raising the prices, and everyone still wants it, so yeah, they're going to keep raising the prices. Yeah. And it's just like, why can't any build that just does what the Model Y does? And it's really good at everything.
And just, I don't even have this selected. I do have actually introduced, but Tesla's Giga Berlin factory just opened this week. So Europeans will have a great flow of vehicles that don't have to wait from allocations from China. And then, so the Chinese market, we'll see how that, you know, actually absorbs the production over there, because they have a lot of production capacity. And then now, yeah, in Europe. So it's going to be interesting to see.
And when is Giga Factory Austin opening? Soon, right?
Very soon. Very soon. I'm not exactly sure of the date right off the top of my head without looking, because
but there's a big party going on at some point over there.
Right. There's just so much stuff to keep track of right now. It's kind of crazy in the EV world. So last week I went to Santa Monica, California for Mercedes Technology Innovation Day 2022. It involved a ride along in the Mercedes EQE, a demonstration of something called Intelligent Park Pilot, and a demonstration of their Level 3 truly hands-free advanced driver assistance system, or ADAS. They call that Drive Pilot. They also had a copy of the EQX concept on display, and we had several presentations about where the company is headed in the future, which is an all-electric one. Now, I feel like I've been sleeping on Mercedes a lot. I didn't realize just how gung-ho they were on EVs. It's really, you know, crept up on me. But being there, you know, they said they'll be half electric by 2025, which is very soon, and all electric by 2030. So that's faster than GM, for instance, which is 2035. And GM is one of the quicker ones, I think. So Kyle also did the same program. So maybe we can compare notes a bit. We don't need to talk about the Intelligent Park Pilot unless you want to. It was interesting, but
it was actually a different program I was on. You did a lot of the technology demonstration. Oh. I did all the EQS SUV and then production. I got to go to the factory where they make EQS.
Right. You didn't go to Santa Monica.
No, I was in Alabama at the factory in Tuscaloosa, which the best thing about going on a Mercedes program to Tuscaloosa is listening to all the Germans pronounce Tuscaloosa.
Hey, so I guess quickly before we get into the EQE and stuff, the EQS SUV, you got to ride along in that. So you got some impressions of the interior. So how does EQS translate to an SUV?
It's literally the same thing on stilts, as expected.
Okay.
It's better in the SUV. You have a better viewpoint out the front. In EQS, I always found that the dash was a little too high. And so here it's pretty nice. It pretty much rides the same 7-seat. I have a whole video ride along on it with one of the engineers, and took it off-road. Very comfortable off-road. Still got the weird brake pedal, and it was like surprisingly quick because I had just been driving the EQS 450 the week before. So I like returned the EQS 450, then got in the EQS SUV. So it was literally back to back comparison, but it was a 580. I'm like, wow, this thing actually moves. Like, it was awesome. And really great ride comfort, really quiet, and everything you would expect a EQS SUV to be is exactly this. And I got to see them going down the production line, pretty much in full production. They're mixed in with the combustion cars. They're on the GLE line. And so essentially they can have a dynamic load split. So they can go from 0 to 100% EV in real time. The battery manufacturing facility, not the cell, but the battery manufacturing facilities 10 miles down the road,
the packs.
Mm-hmm. And so they, yep, for the packs. And so they can pretty much go up to 100% EV on this line and both lines pretty much instantly. It's just on up to order demand.
Oh, sweet. That's kind of, yeah.
Kyle, you weren't here last week when you were testing the R1T. But I brought up a point. I had a BMW iX for one day. Mm. A local dealership got their first one in, and they were closed on Sunday. So they said, if you want to pick this up Saturday night, you could have it all day Sunday. Just bring it back Monday morning. So I did that. I did some charge recordings. And when I was doing my charge recording, guy pulled up in an EQS, and he's had it for a month or so. And he asked me about the iX. Do I like it? Whatever, you know, and we were talking and he said, I hate this thing. I'm making Mercedes take it back. And he said that he's glitchy. He said the touchscreen shuts off, just the whole screen just powers down. And half the time he approaches the car, it won't let him in. Like, it doesn't unlock the doors and he can't get in. And he's had it to the dealership a couple of times and they can't seem to fix it. So he said, I'm making them take it back. And I was looking for another electric alternative. He loved the iX. And when he left, he said, this is what I'm getting. I'm going to go over to the BMW dealership and get one. Have you heard any people complaining about issues like, I mean, it could just be a lemon. It could be a one-off. But have you heard of any electronic glitches or issues with EQS yet?
No, it's MBUX. It's the same system they really put in every other car. It's just sized up. So
right.
I own MBUX personally in one of my vehicles, and it's been flawless. I use it all the time. It never had an issue. And
could just be a lemon.
Yeah, and in EQS, we had no issues. I mean, the door handles kind of suck.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of how they operate.
Right, but... and sometimes they don't pop out and you just got to smack the door. I mean, you get really used to just smashing your EQS to get inside of it.
You get used to that. Yeah. You know, people that spend $140,000, you know what I mean, on the latest, greatest vehicle, I mean, they don't want to smash the side of the door.
you could just push the door handle, but I'm like, let me in the damn thing.
Yeah. And so, well, that's what he was saying. They don't present. Yeah. They don't unlock. I'm out here. It's in the middle of the winter. It takes me 10 minutes to get my car. He said, this is ridiculous. He had to call Mercedes and they had to try to remotely open it for him.
Well, that sounds like a different issue, right? So, like, I think he's got an actual issue, and I think we have not experienced any of that. And I love the EQS from a driving perspective, from a road trip driving perspective. I wouldn't scare me off from buying one. I mean, there's always going to be a bad car. There's always going to be someone who doesn't understand the technology and assumes that it's bad. You know, that's a possibility. So, you know, you just never really know in these situations.
Yeah, exactly. It could just be, there could be something, it could be a glitchy car. All cars,
absolutely.
You know, have that. I just have to reply to one comment. So Simon Matthews asks, how can you love the iX? Simon, I assume you haven't driven one. I know the look on the front is really controversial. Yeah. I don't like it either. I think the front, the new styling, language that BMW is using is hideous, I think. But it is a fantastic driving, you know, relatively large or mid-size electric SUV. I think it drove outstanding. And the interior cabin is tremendously comfortable, beautifully laid out. There's a lot to like about the iX. Exterior styling isn't fantastic. I'll say that. But I put much more weight on interior styling and comfort, because when I'm driving the vehicle, that's what I see. I don't really care if the guy next to me looks at my car and says, God, that's an ugly car. I'm looking at what I see when I'm driving it. And the iX is a tremendous
all electric SUV.
I think BMW dealerships should try to get an EQS on trade-in and then put that next to the iX, and then people will be like, oh, the iX actually looks good.
Ouch. Ouch. Hey, so let's talk about the EQE just for a bit. So I had the segue. I had the Mercedes Vice President Electric Vehicle Architecture, Christoph Sierzinski, driving, a German guy. It was great. So he's driving and he's like spitting all these numbers, facts and figures. And it was so much to take in. Like, we were in like Santa Monica, going up the beach, going up the coast. And I glanced at the water at one point, and that's about it. You know, just trying to feel how the car rode and how the dynamics of it. So the EQE is like a foot shorter than the EQS, but it's only a few inches shorter in the wheelbase, like 3.5 inches shorter wheelbase. So the room is, it's like you're sitting in an EQS, maybe slightly tighter, but not. I mean, the EQS is so large inside anyway, it can, you can afford to lose some size. And actually, speaking of the looks, like Jordan said, so the EQS has some, I'd say, polarizing styling too, not because it's so out there, but it's maybe too conservative. It's kind of blandish in a way. But I think it works a lot better on the shorter EQE. And I almost think that's the car to get. It'll be cheaper. It'll be more affordable. I think the pack, is it got a smaller option pack? It comes with a slightly smaller pack. It's like 90 kilowatt hours instead of 109. So I have 112.
I think it's 107.8 usable.
All right. That sounds familiar. So yeah, I have an article. I did mine on Motor One, actually. So the Mercedes EQ ride, Mercedes-Benz EQE first ride. So you can search that on the MotorOne.com website.
Dominic. So a couple questions about EQE. Yeah. You've driven and been in EQS before. Yes. Did it have the wafty, smooth ride?
So ours did not. It had a more of a mechanical suspension. It didn't have the adaptive air suspension.
Really? So it's just a physical steel suspension then?
It will have it optional to come. So you'll be able to get that same sort of experience, because the EQS does have a great ride with that adaptive air setup. So this one, I could feel the tires on the pavement. You know, I could feel like the bumps a little bit more. I mean, it was still nice. It was still, you know.
But what about rear steer?
Rear steer was great. It comes with the same kind of rear steer, so 4.5 degrees.
Oh, instead of 10.
You can pay extra.
Oh, you should pay extra.
Unlocked to get the 10. And yeah. I mean, it's like a shorter wheelbase, so it's not as maybe as needed as it might be.
No, but think about how cool 10 degrees is on even a shorter wheelbase. You're like,
10 degrees is awesome. The Hummer has 10 degrees. Just throw
that out
there.
But we can't comment on what that feels like.
Right. We can't comment how that feels like.
Tom can.
I can. It was really cool.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I do have a first drive impressions video up on Inside EVs if anybody wants to see that. Did the crab walk. The crab walk is freaky. You know, when you're driving and the whole vehicle is doing this instead of going forward, it just feels so weird.
Right.
I don't want to comment on crab walk because I don't want to get sued by GM, but I do want to say we're making, as soon as we get it, a whole video driving around town only crab walking.
Right. So EQE.
How did you not like drive into cars parked on the side of the road?
Well, it's a Hummer. You just push them out of the way. Who cares? Right.
Cars, what cars?
Yeah.
EQE with a 4.5 steering. Like we went off the highway and went up in these like little steep little neighborhood roads and everything. It was like kind of odd place.
Did you see some cool houses though?
There were some nice houses. I mean, I didn't really get a chance to soak it in much, but so yeah, it's coming up. But I do remember coming up around a couple turns, a little bit tighter than 90 degrees, like almost hairpin. Like, and it was like, oh, that's kind of impressive, actually. It's kind of nice. Yeah. I'm trying to think of, so
it's the same motor that was yours, a rear wheel drive or all wheel drive?
I was just going to say that it's a 350E plus or 350 plus. So it's a rear wheel drive only. So it didn't have all the power that the, you know, all wheel drive EQS might have, but you know, he stabbed the accelerator a few times and you get the instant torque. So it's, you know,
I think the rear wheel drive 450 EQS is the one to have personally.
Okay.
I like it. These are comfortable cars. They don't need to be massively fast,
and I believe having no motor on the front axle means you can probably have a little bit better turning radius. Probably,
I don't know if that translates to the EVA 2 platform.
Okay, right. But that's the way it is on the ID4, but the Volkswagen ID4 is like that. Yeah, so I enjoyed it, and I was, but more overall though, I really, and I think it's, and it's, the experience is just like the EQS. So you got the big MBUX hyper screen, that's an option, and your passengers can like watch videos. They have to use their own sound. You can get earbuds if they have their own like headset in the car, so the driver's not, you know, distracted by the sound of whatever's going on.
Ever use that? Do you think anyone will ever use that?
I would use that on a long
road trip. I would just watch something on my phone rather than figuring out how to get video over on that screen and then getting their factory headphones on.
You know, I think I like the experience of the headphones and everything, kind of immersive, and the bigger screen. And if the driver like looks over, it'll shut off. Like if he's looking over for more than like 2 seconds, the cameras see him and they shut that down. So it's got like that safety feature built in. So that's kind of cool.
Let me just do a little plug for Inside EV's podcast. That little exchange right there is why I think this is such a successful podcast. The four of us have completely different opinions and tastes on what vehicles should do and what options we like. So like that is like so typical of us. Like, and what a lot of you guys don't see is sometimes after the podcast's over, we'll hang on and just chat about things.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it really comes out then on how we just have different thoughts and opinions on how vehicles should be laid out and how we should drive them and the options we want. And I think that's really a big reason why this podcast really works, because it's not for people just expressing the same opinions. We all really have different tastes and wants and needs in our cars. Okay.
Yeah, end of
podcast rant.
Yeah.
So, you know, Tom, I actually think you're wrong on that point.
we're wrong about how our taste in trucks, because I spec'd my Rivian R1T out, you know, without any, you know, consult from Kyle. And after I told him everything I ordered and the spec out, he's like, that is exactly what I want. Yep. So, you know, we're not completely different.
Sure. Yeah. No, your truck spec is wonderful, but you know, you're really going to hate driving that thing around. You know, you don't want to be one of those launch green, you know, an early truck, you know, someone should take off your hands.
We'll see. That may very well. I'm telling you, I'm 50-50 at this point on what we're going to do. We got to get them. We got to drive them. My wife's got to drive them. And then I got to see about the utility. You know, the Rivian definitely does not have the utility that the F-150 Lightning will have.
Oh, there's more space in the Rivian. Anyone in there.
And I need, cargo space and stuff like that. So, you know, that's going to weigh on my decision. So we'll see.
Okay.
And Nathan Green mentions Silverado EV as well. So that's something. And there'll be the GMC Sierra version of that as well.
Yeah. Cybertruck
in 2028.
This week, I think Elon, you know, said next year, 2023, they'll hopefully start production. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Hey, Dom, I just want to ask you about the EQE thing again.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you went to experience the automated parking situation, which uses Valeo sensors. We love the guys at Valeo. And how did that work? Did you get to see it park itself?
That was actually Bosch system. So that's
isn't it Valeo LiDAR on the front of Mercedes?
Valeo LiDAR, right. I don't want to misspeak, but I think it was Bosch, the driving, because it's not the car that doing the parking. Well, the car's doing some of the parking, but a lot of it is sensors in the building itself. Oh, so it's a whole infrastructure thing. The building is driving the car.
The building off.
And it's not just, and it can do it with like a lot of modern cars, not just like the EQE or EQS or whatever.
So like if the building spots some dude drunk peeing in a stairwell, they can just have your EQE run them over.
See, the thing is, you won't have people peeing in the stairwell because they'll just drop the car off at the bottom of the entrance and not have to go up and down flights of stairs and parking garages.
The bushes will get watered. That's great.
So, I mean, it was an interesting system. I don't think we didn't really write about it because it's not really EV specific.
But you got to see it.
It was an interesting, we did see it and it did work really well. A little bit slow, but you know, it didn't do a lot of corrections. Sometimes when you in cars, when they do self-park things, it's like 6-point turns and things. This is a nice, smooth operation, backed into the spot. It was very nicely done. It was impressive, actually.
Dom, do you have to map it out first, and then the vehicle repeats it, or does it just do it all on its own?
Well, the building itself sort of sees how everything is laid out and sort of directs the car. It speaks to the car to give it the right steering inputs.
So did Mercedes outfit this parking garage with their sensors to demonstrate it?
Yes.
That's really cool.
Actually, they use a LiDAR system in the garage and in sort of bigger units, but they're downsized and commercialized. And they
can
use it for...
Do you think they've left the sensors in this garage so that someone who owns an EQS or EQE with this system could try it in the future?
Probably not. No, I think when they do it in regular garages or even in yards, like at a factory, staging other cars at a factory, you could use that same system there. It's sort of a lot less manpower to move cars around if the cars kind of do it themselves.
I think the future is not this. I think the future is just having the cars drive into a parking garage on their own, looking for a space as we would do as humans, and then parking themselves without having to outfit the garage. But it seems like an interesting interim solution.
Right. I had the same thought. And I thought it was like a lot of money and expense. But then I did speak about the business application and the possible revenues like for parking garages in the cities. And it's like,
But how much would you really pay to just not drive your car up a flight of stairs or a flight of a ramp?
I mean, you're already paying for parking in a big city. And if they add a couple of bucks onto that.
Yeah. But how many Mercedes with this system times an extra $5 times, whatever or does that equal the cost of the hardware for the amount of time that this is going to be a relevant application?
I mean,
I don't know. I'm just curious.
That's the whole thing. Like, how long will this be relevant? Because, I expect that cars will be able to do this kind of things themselves at some point. Right. Mm-hmm. So when is that? Is that 8 years out? Is that 15 years out?
Well, Teslas are already running over curbs trying to pick us up at the front of Targets. So, I mean, they're at least like,
they're getting close.
Trying.
Right.
And BMW has a self-parking feature that's similar to what XPeng uses, where you can store a specific parking spot at a specific garage. Like if you live in an apartment or, a condo and you have a set parking spot, it's your spot. Mm-hmm. So what you do is you have to drive it into the garage, turn it on, and for one time you map how to get to your spot, even if you back into the spot, and then it'll just repeat that every time and it won't hit anything. And it will make adjustments if, let's say, you backed into your spot, but you can't because now there's a car parked somewhere else. It'll make minor adjustments and get into the spot. But that's their solution. We did that parking demonstration over in Germany on the iX first drive, and it worked really well. But again, the way it is set up now, you can't get out of your vehicle and just let the car do it. You've got to still sit in the vehicle because you can't have a car driving itself with nobody in it yet. It's not allowed. So it's kind of like, okay, you could just be doing it yourself, but you're going to turn it on and then just sit there and let the car drive through the parking garage slower than what you would, and then back into your parking spot. So it's kind of like, what's the point right now?
Well, what happens if you get there and this guy parks in your spot?
If you have a Hummer EV, you just park in the spot. Yeah,
you just drive over it.
If it'll fit.
Yeah, that's a problem, Kyle, because
it's meant
to park in a specific parking spot.
Right. I mean, but
I don't
like
think
condo,
it can find another spot.
So in a condo, no one else is going to park in your spot.
It's possible. It still happens. Then you're underground. The car doesn't have cell signal, and it blocks the entire parking garage.
And I guess you get a call. Maybe.
Well, at least it should just park and block the car that's in your spot so they can't get out. I wouldn't mind that. Now you're going to wait until I leave because you parked in my parking spot.
And then it's like an electric car for your home spot. So the car goes and parks itself, and then you got to go find it to plug it in.
Yeah. So, I mean,
it's all pretty stupid.
Right. I mean, that's where inductive charging comes in, but that's a whole other thing. Oh, I got to speak to the president or the CEO of Mercedes at that thing. I didn't know who he was. I was having a great conversation. He came up. First name's Dimitri. And, having this great conversation. Nice guy. And I don't even know where I was going with that. What's that?
This is the CEO of Mercedes USA. It wasn't Ola.
No, yes, Mercedes USA, Dimitri. Yeah, I didn't know who he was. So we had this great conversation, and then later on, I found out he was like, "Oh, I was like." Then he sat by my at dinner, and then I was like all intimidated. I couldn't talk.
You should have been like, "What is up with the brake pedal on EQS?"
Oh, I was pitching on before I knew who he was. I was pitching him on the whole inductive charging thing, and I was like, "This is, I think, where the future of luxury EV is should be headed."
What do you think? What do you think?
He said, you know, what we hear a lot about of inductive charging is just not that efficient yet. And I was like, well, not yet, but it's getting better and better. And the people who make the systems at least will tell you that's it's going to be the standard. But we're almost out of time, but I did really want to mention really quick a couple things. So the Scott Koff, VW USA CEO, is optimistic that the ID Buzz will be made in the USA. So I don't think we knew that before, and I thought that was kind of exciting.
I don't think we knew that before. It's Scott Keo, right?
Keo, yeah. K-E-O-U-G-H. Yeah. So I was never sure how to pronounce it, actually. But so that was pretty neat. And also, share this, add to stream. So Chevrolet also teased this Equinox again, the concept. And so we get a good view of what that looks like.
Dual tone. By the way, I love what they're doing with the headlights.
Yeah.
With the charging stuff. I saw it on the Hummer. It was pretty cool. Oh, wait, it wasn't pretty cool. I can't tell you.
Flush door handles. And there's the rear.
Oh, that's cool.
Equinox.
I just hope that they retain the same size as the current Equinox, that they don't make it smaller so it's more efficient and ends up being in between an Equinox and a Trax right now. Equinox size is perfect for families. We had one for 7 years. We loved it. I had always said I wanted all electric Equinox. So please, Jim, keep it the same size that you have now. It's really useful at that size. Don't make it smaller so you could add another 20 miles of range to it.
If they make it smaller, you can always move up to the Blazer, which might be a little bit larger, which is, it'll have the same design language. I think the Blazer might even look a bit better. We'll have to see. But
don't mess with the Equinox. It works.
Okay.
Tom's like the biggest Equinox fan. I'm going to get Tom a shirt made up that says, "I love the Chevy Equinox."
Okay, but make sure it's with the new badging with the three lines. Yeah, I'll wear that.
Okay, good. We got to work on that. Yeah.
Okay. So let's see. So that, I think, brings us to the end of the show. Yeah. So if you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Ologny at Tomolog. That's with two M's. Kyle is at, it's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.